It's a movement, but it's about people. Be the People is about we the people joining forces to reclaim and reshape the best of our nation's time-treasured traditions. Each week, we offer insightful interviews with movers and shakers from all different spheres of life. And now, please welcome Dr. Carol Swain.
Today in the news, we're hearing a lot about slavery, especially the slave reparation movement. And most of us think of slavery as something that happened a long time ago. It happened in America. It was bad. We corrected it. But what a lot of people don't know is that slavery is still taking place in American cities around you, in communities, and across the world. There are human beings being bought and sold today. Joining me today on the Be the People show to talk about this very important issue is Gabrielle Thompson. She's the executive director of Free for Life International, an organization that was founded in Nashville, Tennessee. And so help me welcome Gabrielle Thompson to the Be the People show. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Carol Swain.
So, Gabrielle, tell us about Free for Life International. How did it get started?
Thank you. It got started by a woman named Colette Bercue. She's the founder of our organization. And one day she was watching television and there was a series about human trafficking in Romania. And it tore her apart. It absolutely destroyed her. But she couldn't just sit there and feel the pain. So she thought, how can I be a part of this? How can I make a difference within this community? So that is when she started Free for Life International in 2006. And since then, we've been around 13 years, and we have programs in 5 different countries presently.
Well, Gabrielle, tell us, if she started, is it an international organization, or does it look at human trafficking in the United States?
During the time of Colette's tenure at the organization, it was primarily focused internationally, and she worked with legislation in Tennessee as well. So, for example, presently we are number one in the United States for our anti-human trafficking legislation, and that is partially because of the foundation that she created. However, since my tenure in the organization, we do more domestic work serving survivors here in the United States, but we also have other programs internationally as well. We have quite a diversified approach.
Well, could you tell us exactly how people are identified? Because I know from the stories that appear on the news every now and then, they find a person, you know, that's been enslaved in the United States. How are people identified?
That's a great question, Carol, and it really varies based on the type of trafficking that they are living in. So, for example, right now in the United States, the type of trafficking that is the main priority to law enforcement is sex trafficking of minors. And so one thing that authorities will do are kind of troll the internet looking for pedophiles or posing as individuals that are interested in purchasing child sex. So when that is something that is done and officials are actually finding those traffickers as well as those buyers, they will do things like stings. However, there are millions of other people that are not minors and that are not found during those methods. So that's where, for example, involving what I call concerned citizens, which is really anyone that has a heart for this or just wants human trafficking to end, thinks that it is absolutely despicable, which it is, and those people may find something that is a red flag to them and call the human trafficking hotline, and then officials will be involved. However, there are also raids that are done. Free for Life International has been a part of raids internationally, and we also, our primary rescue initiative that's done internationally as well is called border monitoring, where we monitor the traffic of individuals being trafficked in between countries. So there's really quite a variety of ways that people are rescued, and we've also seen individuals that are enslaved actually contacting the human trafficking hotline themselves or asking individuals for help, and that's how they find their freedom.
Now, some nations worse than others, you know, I know that in some Asian nations, maybe like Thailand, their reputation is that there may be, you know, women, for example, that are in bondage for prostitution, and maybe they were sold into it or born into it. So is it more frequent in some nations than others?
I think it is more frequent in some nations than others, but the challenge when looking at human trafficking is that it is, for example, the world's second largest criminal enterprise. And within anything that is kind of underground as such, it's very hard to be able to really see the true numbers of those that are enslaved. However, you mentioned Thailand. Thailand and Cambodia are very well known for having some of the worst child trafficking in the world.
Yes.
As well as some of the largest and most public trafficking that exists. However, in India has more people enslaved than any other country, but the United States also has its own specific issue, which primarily relates to teenage girls.
Now, also, President Trump got a lot of flack over separating children from their parents that were coming in illegally. And so part of the legal justification for that is that sometimes traffickers are not really the parents of those children, that they send children over, you know, with adults so that they would get better treatment. So do you see that as an issue through immigration with illegal immigration, that children being brought into the country by people who are not their parents?
Absolutely. And on as when looking at immigration here in the United States, as well as when looking at anyone that is trying to migrate in other countries, that becomes a massive issue where people pose as the parents of children when really they are either human smugglers that then sell the children to traffickers, or they are traffickers themselves that the parents may have trusted or may not have trusted. Now, in this particular case that you bring up, I think that that is absolutely an issue. There's a lot of trafficking coming from Latin America up into the United States. But I think that the way that that could potentially be resolved is by having very intensive checking of the documents that both the children and the adults have to make sure they are related. Because typically you're not going to see, specifically in Latin America, parents trafficking their children if they're traveling with them. However, it does get very dangerous when it is an adult that is not related to them. So I think that that could be a way to help resolve that. But it really is very tricky as well, again, when it comes to human smuggling, when someone is paid off and there are fake documents that might say, this is my child. And those smugglers actually have intentions of selling those children.
Now, would you or your organization be in favor of DNA tests, especially when it came to immigration situations at the border, where you have large numbers of people coming in bringing children?
In regards to human trafficking and doing DNA tests to truly ensure that those individuals are related to the person that is accompanying them, I would be in favor of that for the protection of the children and to prevent those individuals from being trafficked, yes.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break.
Are you wondering what we can do about immigration? Then get your copy of my newly released book, Debating Immigration, the second edition, available at Amazon, Cambridge University Press, and all major booksellers.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
We're talking about human trafficking, and Gabrielle is going to tell us, or at least I'm going to ask her, to tell us about the different kinds of human trafficking.
Thank you, Carol. And you're bringing up a great point, which is that there is a wide misconception, especially here in the United States, that there is really only one type of human trafficking, and that is sex trafficking. Now, of course, that is very true, and it is a huge part of the trafficking problem on a global level. But there are various other types of trafficking that individuals may not really realize and types that we encounter more often. So for example, we of course have sex trafficking, then we have forced labor trafficking. And we can see those individuals here in the United States. They're working in landscaping companies, construction. They might be working at ethnic restaurants.
You're kidding. I would think they would be locked up in someone's home.
That's another type of trafficking, actually.
What is that called?
That is called domestic servitude. And so those individuals, they're very hard for organizations like Free for Life International to intercept because they live at the home of their traffickers and they're often working, you know, 18 hours a day, not receiving any pay, and are often abused by the man of the household as well.
So you're telling me that when we go to restaurants and we have people working on our homes, that some of those people could be trafficked?
Yes. So even, for example, house cleaners, before I have anyone come and work on my house, whether it be in landscaping, whether it be working in my home as a cleaning, I always ask them specific questions about, are you being treated well? How much do you make an hour? Are you receiving what percent of those funds?
But you don't ask them if they're legal.
No, because... And that's the other problem is that, of course, those that are undocumented individuals are very highly at risk of being trafficked.
Yes.
But there's such a fear here that if I were to ask someone, are you legal? And they say no, that I would then I would contact the authorities. And so there's a lot of fear attached there. And actually, you're making me think of an interesting point, which is last year, the Human Trafficking Hotline came out with some data about calls that were made regarding individuals that were being trafficked. And one of the top was actually door-to-door salesmen.
You're kidding.
And a lot of those individuals were illegal immigrants.
Are they selling those magazines to us?
Yeah. Or knives, you know, things like that. What do people go door-to-door to sell? Yeah. So the other types, though, that and these are more international, you'll see surrogate trafficking. You also see child soldiers.
When you say more international, are you telling me that there are Americans or people speaking English that are working in these jobs and they are being trafficked?
Yes, ma'am.
That is shocking. I'm learning something right now that I never thought about.
And that's amazing that you're saying that, because I think truly that the majority of the United States, if they were able to have this information and truly realize that they are encountering people that are being enslaved in places that we go on a daily basis or groups that we interact with, I think that it would very much change the way that the public perceives human slavery today.
But I mean, what can someone do about it? Suppose we were to encounter a person, they confided in us about their situation, then what? And then if the authorities intervene, what's going to happen to that person? Will they have a place to live? Will they have food? So how does it work when someone is rescued or exposed?
That's a great question. And of course, every case varies. So let's maybe go through two different cases. So let's say you hire someone to clean your home and you're asking them just some simple questions that I was mentioning previously, and they come out to you that they are actually held against their will, forced to work X amount of hours, and they live in a house with 30 other people. So you want to assist them. So you contact the Human Trafficking Hotline, or in every state, there are our own state's hotlines, and then the hotline will walk you through the next steps. So for example, they will say, okay, great, there's these organizations that have beds available right now for that individual. Additionally, if they are an undocumented individual, there are things called a T1 visa. That is for people that are being trafficked that can receive a visa to stay in the United States. Now, if someone is in the same with sex trafficking, except a little different in the sense that they may be addicted to drugs, they may have endured extreme violence, and so they would have a different type of rehabilitation or a different type of shelter they would go to. But I recommend people always contacting the Human Trafficking Hotline because they are the experts in being able to share the resources that are available in your area for that person, as well as contacting authorities.
And have you had enough experiences that you can just give us an example of someone that was rescued and it had a happy ending?
Yes, I can.
All right, pick someone.
Now, some of the women that we're working with in the United States, their story of rescue is not as traditional as what I'm sharing about. So I will give one that is kind of a little bit more traditional. So there was a woman that was actually being trafficked by her own family, and she was trafficked from the time that she was a minor, and her family was incredibly abusive during this time. And so she would go, her family would abuse her. She would go into the ER. And so over the course of 12 years, she had 10 concussions, but her family was with her, and no one at the time asked her, are you okay? Because that really is a red flag to any healthcare provider. Why is this individual getting so many concussions over this course of time? And so what was amazing, though, is one particular time she went into the hospital, and she was an adult at that time, and the medical provider asked her, are you okay? Is something going on here that I don't know about? And she said, yes, actually, I've been living in this world where I'm being abused on a daily basis, and my parents are selling me for sex. And so at that time, then the healthcare provider was able to, before she left the hospital, arrange services for her. So she was picked up by a female social worker to go to a short-term shelter to go through the emergent care of basically breaking some of those trauma bonds, breaking some of the other issues, just acclimating back into a real life, which is, of course, very tricky. So now we work with this particular survivor. She's a part of our scholarship program. And she went to a short-term rehabilitation facility and then a long-term rehabilitation facility. Now she's pursuing a bachelor's degree and is living at a home, a halfway house with other women, and is pursuing her healing. She has a therapist and is actually free for the first time.
And does your organization rescue men as well as women?
We traditionally have only worked with women and girls. However, due to some of our programs, first of all, we'll never say no to anyone. If there is a male that is being trafficked that we encounter, we will find the resources for him to go to a safe place and receive what he needs. However, we have never had that situation with the type of work that we do. And I will mention that there is a lot of issues when working with males that are trafficking victims because there's a lot of shame attached. So they have a hard time coming forward and saying, I'm a trafficking victim. And sometimes because of the pride towards wanting to work and support your family, they may not even know they're being trafficked when they're working, you know, 18 hours a day. Doing construction. So it's very tricky, but now for the first time in the last 16 months, the United States has its first male-only shelter for human trafficking victims in Florida, and as well as internationally. There is becoming more movements towards serving men.
Well, we're going to take another break, and when we return, one of the things that we will talk about is how people who want to get involved in your organization can help with this problem.
There are speakers, and then there are great speakers who know the importance of creating that memorable moment. Well, the key to any successful event is an informative and inspirational speaker. Professor Dr. Carol Swain is that gifted speaker. She delivers passionately from the heart every time. To find out more about booking Carol for your next great event, simply go to carolmswain.com. Click on Public Speaking, and then click the blue Book Carol tab.
We're back with my guest, Gabrielle Thompson, and we're talking about trafficking, human trafficking. Where do you see this sex trafficking taking place in the United States? Most of us would assume that it's in the seedy parts of town.
That's absolutely correct. It is happening in the seedy parts of town. It's happening on streets in particular areas. It does not necessarily have to be seedy. But one thing that we've seen coming to arise within suburbia, America, are actually brothels run out of homes that look like homes that we would just live in, very non-assuming. And actually, they're brothels with children living in them.
Are these children that don't go to school?
Yes. So once a child is being trafficked, typically they do not go to school and they are kept in home or in the location of which they're being trafficked by their captor.
Fascinating. Gabrielle, Is there any type of profile that would fit, you know, the trafficker?
Thank you for asking that question. And I want to go ahead and correct some of the misconception. I think people often assume it's a scary man, but we see a lot of women that are traffickers. We also see a lot of family members that are traffickers. There is no necessarily identity towards a trafficker. It can be really a man or a woman of any age, race, socioeconomic status whatsoever. But of course, we see more men that are traffickers, yes.
What about region of the country? We've talked a little bit about nations, but in the United States, for example, a state like Tennessee, is it more common to one region of the country than the other?
We see a lot of trafficking in all port cities. So that's definitely one place when you look at anywhere, first of all, close to a border. So Texas has a huge human trafficking problem. But we also see, you know, New York City, Los Angeles, Atlanta, because they have a massive airport. But Nashville is actually very much has a ton of human trafficking here for a variety of reasons. So anywhere, of course, in urban space will have a lot of trafficking. But things like large events will also breed a lot of human trafficking. So because, for example, Nashville is now one of the top places to have conventions, that has brought in a lot of trafficking. The success of some of our sports teams, the NFL draft happening here, that is a breeding ground for human trafficking.
Which form of human trafficking?
Sex trafficking.
Okay.
But in those port cities, like I mentioned, that's where we're going to see a lot of labor trafficking as well.
I remember a few years ago, I met a woman who was working at a major hotel downtown, and she was telling me that they were paying them only like a dollar or two an hour. So would that have been a case of trafficking?
Technically, yes.
And I think she was living on the premises. But it did sound like slavery.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't sure that she wasn't on one of the visa programs, that maybe if she came in on some of the guest worker programs, I'm not sure that the employers are not allowed sometimes to pay people minimum wage because they pay their fees to come here. But whatever she was describing, it seemed like slavery to me.
That sounds like a human trafficking case, in my expert opinion.
Well, I confess that I missed I did not have the knowledge and I didn't intervene, but I was shocked by it. And it was a major hotel in the city of Nashville.
It happens in all the least assuming places.
Well, going back to, you know, your organization and what it's trying to accomplish, what would you like our listeners to know? And how can they help you? What should they know beyond this conversation? We all shocked. I'm shocked, you know, that this is taking place, you know, right under our noses. And we see homeless people and we recognize that as being a problem. But with human trafficking, you're telling us these people are working all around us. So we have to be trained to have eyes to see and ears to hear and how to intervene. So in the time that we have remaining, I want you to basically train us and then tell us how we can help your organization.
Great. Thank you so much. Free for Life International is very unique because we focus on holistic methods of fighting and preventing human trafficking through four specific ways. We work prevention with a prevention curriculum worldwide for the most at-risk youth, which are orphans and children living in poverty. We have a rescue initiative in Nepal and India that has rescued 1,200 women and girls. We have a long-term shelter with no time limit in Thailand, where we see an average stay of about 5 years. And we also have an international scholarship program for any survivor around the globe that wants to pursue vocational or higher education. However, all of our survivors presently for that program are living in the United States. And first, I want to say that it's important for everyone listening here today that knowing that you can be a part of changing this and really that knowing here right now that there are more people enslaved in the world than ever before. That should move you. But we cannot allow that to be the present and much less the future for our generations. And so we all need to act now. We all need to, as Carol mentioned, keep our eyes and our ears open and trust our intuition. And so to respond to what you were saying about being trained, one thing I do when I give a red flags training to the public is I say, trust your intuition. If something doesn't feel right, then it probably isn't right. And that may sound very simple, but it's the first step to actually having a conversation with a victim and intercepting them. And so it's challenging depending on the environment in which you are encountering someone that may be trafficked, and again, with the different types of sex trafficking or trafficking in general. So I would say first, if someone you're encountering someone that is in a potential labor trafficking situation, asking them questions, like I previously mentioned, getting to know the people that work around you.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay, suppose I'm chatting with my yard man and I find out, you know, that he or she is not being paid what I think they should be paid for the job. Then what? Mm-hmm. Who are you going to call? We're going to call the trafficking hotline, or are we going to call ICE, the Immigration Enforcement Agency of Homeland Security?
I would ask a few more questions before assuming human trafficking. So one part of human trafficking is that you're being controlled by another person. So wages is one item. The other item would be any type of force, any type of control. So I would ask, what is your living situation like? Do you have your own cell phone? Are you free to come and go as you please? And then as you gather those questions, you can better determine if that person is being trafficked or if they're not being paid appropriately as an undocumented individual.
And then how do people get information? Because I know every now and then we find out about a person that's been enslaved, maybe as a domestic slave, you know, since the age of 7, and they're 20-some, and they escape and they report it. How do they, if they've been in the house, get educated to the point that they know that that this is wrong, that they have rights, and if they can get to the right person, they can report it? So how does that education process take place?
Oh, that is such a great question, but it truly varies. And even some of the women that we have intercepted that are being sex trafficked don't fully understand that they're being sex trafficked until they are brought out of the trafficking. And so I think it's just on a case-by-case basis. But typically, if someone has been trafficked for an extended period of time, like you mentioned, they know that they're being controlled. And the first moment that they are able to be in a free space and in the public, they will ask for help. But oftentimes, because of their trafficker, they are controlled and never allowed to interact with people in the community.
And so, you know, sort of bringing this to a spiritual dimension. So do you think that maybe innately in every human being, we talk about freedom, there's a yearning to be free, that people know, that they know that they're being abused, or they know that they should have human rights. I'm not sure they see the person that's holding them captive coming and going. And so they break free a lot of times, and they go and they get help. And then we read about it in the newspaper.
I agree with you. First of all, I think all humans, and the beauty of working in anti-trafficking is I've seen the incredible resilience of a spirit and a heart. So I think, first of all, that, and that's the only way that trafficked victims heal. But then, yes, I believe that we all know when our freedoms are being restricted, whether or not we have the right word for it, like human trafficking. We know that something is wrong with being abused or being forced to have sex with many men a day or being forced to work for 18 hours a day. We know that that's wrong. Do we know what to do with it if we're in that situation? No.
Okay, and with the time we have remaining, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and learn more about your organization?
Thank you so much. So I would say for all of you, if you're interested in being a part of the organization, we cannot exist without those that have a heart to graciously give to our work. And so you can find us at Free for Life, INTL. That's free, FORLIFE, INTL.org. And you can find us there. And also the Human Trafficking Hotline, if you see anything that is suspicious to you, is 1-888 573-7888.
And I will be posting that information online. And I thank you so much for being our guest today and educating me and my audience. And for the listeners, you know the drill. It's up to us. We the people must be the people who change our world. And we can do that. And this is an issue that's so important that each of us can have the eyes to see, the ears to hear, and the mouth to speak out on behalf of others. Until next time.